You have Muslims being forced to eat pork, drink alcohol, the Quran pretty much. You can go to jail if you're reading it, if you're saying assalamu alaikum, peace be with you.
Why aren't Uyghurs allowed to leave? Why can't people go in and talk to the people? So that in itself, if China, you know what? In the summertime, if any woman is wearing long sleeves, did you see those doctors disappear? Did you see those doctors being killed? Or a skirt past her knee, a skirt just past her knee.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Aslan.
Yes, how are you?
Good, brother. How are you?
Alhamdulillah.
It's good to finally meet up with you. I heard you're doing some great work. You're a human rights activist.
Jazakallah khair. You too, brother. I followed you for many years, the Deen Show. Everyone loves you, obviously, and subhanAllah, it's nice to finally see you.
MashaAllah, alhamdulillah, nice to finally meet you. We heard some of the good work you're doing, and you're out of Australia, correct?
I was born and raised in Australia. I'm currently residing in Turkey, Istanbul, but I work in Bahrain, so I'm across three countries.
Now, how did you get involved? We hear the headlines, we read the news, we see that there's a modern-day Inquisition happening, and people are just asleep. But you're bringing to light some of these atrocities that are happening, women getting separated from their families, from their husbands, being forced into marriages. You have Muslims being forced to eat pork, drink alcohol, the Quran pretty much. You can go to jail if you're reading it, if you're saying assalamu alaikum, peace be with you. And ironic, is this also happening to the Christians out there? To both Muslims and Christians, or just the Muslims?
So the issue is far deeper than just Islam. We have to talk about the actual geographical region, which is we refer to as East Turkestan, and it is the land of the Uyghurs. So Islam makes a big part of our culture, of the Uyghur culture. So for many, many years, technically, Muslims in general, when we talk about Hui or Chinese Muslims, they normally live freely within China, but even they, since 2018, have been oppressed in the manner that you've mentioned, but it's predominantly happening to the Uyghur Muslims and the other Turkic minorities, such as Kazakhs and Kyrgyz, in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. When you talk about other groups, yes, there are Christians that are also persecuted. They are not allowed to practice in their own way. The only sort of Islam or the only sort of Christianity is allowed to be portrayed is the state-run communist versions of Islam or Christianity. And this has been well documented. You can literally type in Sinicized Islam or Chinese version of Islam into Google, and you will see how they try to reinterpret, retranslate the Quran and make it a communistic version of it.
Is it true now that you have over 2 million plus Muslims that are in some specific type of camps? Can you tell us about that?
So, according to the most conservative estimates, around 1 million, upwards of 3 million. But what was interesting was one of the Chinese spokespeople, Victor Gao, around this time last year was on Al Jazeera and said that the Uyghur population is 6 to 7 million people. However, according to Chinese statistics, and you can do this research, you can Google it right now, the Uyghur population in China or in East Turkestan, by official standards, is 11 million. And so for him to blurt out 6-7 million, we worry the numbers could be around 5 million. Now, the camps are separated into four sort of groups. The first group, the most light, where you have people go to like work. They go from 9 to 5, they get educated, meaning they are told, they are propagated, they are forced into renouncing their religion and to accept communism as their religion and to accept Xi Jinping instead of Allah as their Lord. Now, the second type of concentration or detention are the infamous concentration camps that we've seen, where people go into these places arbitrarily, they are not sentenced, and they spend anywhere between, some make it out in a few months, they're allowed to leave, and others have remained in there since its opening, its since they've been opened, and there's others where they're actually sentenced to lifelong prison sentences, sometimes 10 years, sometimes 20 years. And it's very arbitrary. They actually don't go through any sort of trial period, or they're not sentenced, and there's no documentation. It's very, all right, you prayed, all right, for example, 7 years. You were giving nasiha to someone. So even saying something like, for example, brother, don't smoke, it is haram. See that one statement, that could land you maybe 10 years in jail. It's very arbitrary. There's no actual rule book as to this crime or this reason, this sabab, gives you this many years. Just don't know. And it's not even Islam. There are some people who haven't practiced a day of Islam in their life. They probably don't even know how to do salah. Even these people are taken into camps. So as I mentioned before, it's not necessarily that you're simply Muslim, but you are also Uyghur, just by nationality or ethnic group.
So Uyghur, how do you pronounce that again?
So in my language, you would say Uyghur. Uyghur. But in the Western English, they normally Uyghur. Say Uyghur.
Uyghur Muslim, like, yeah, Uyghur.
Yeah. The land which the Chinese refer to is officially called the Xinjiang, yes. Uyghur Autonomous Region. Now, the Uyghurs themselves had two independent states before the invasion of the Chinese Communist Party. One, in 1933, we established the East Turkestan Islamic Republic. That was short-lived. And then 10 years later, we established another East Turkestan Republic, which lasted for 5 years, but that was dissolved with the help of Russia. So in 1949, the Communist Party said, you know what? We don't want these Uyghurs revolting against us again. Let's give them some sort of autonomous region, and we bought into it. So technically, autonomy means you have a leader and you run your own affairs, but on paper, we actually don't have any autonomy. So in 1955, we were officially called the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. And if we were given real autonomy, there would be no independence movement today. So this oppression hasn't been happening for the past 3-4 years. It's been happening for, especially under Chinese communist rule, for 70 years. And various for Chinese nationalists before that and other under the Manchu Empire. So especially the Uyghurs and the Chinese for a good 260 years have been at each other's throats.
Now, is it true that we're hearing stories of women, Muslim women, are being forced out of their legitimate marriages with their husbands and forced to marry someone from the Communist Party, from the Chinese Party?
Yes, this is true. And as I mentioned, you know, Islam, we are one of the groups within China that haven't assimilated into the Han Chinese, say, society, because Islam plays a big factor in that. And so you would rarely ever see Uyghurs marrying into non-Muslim or with Han Chinese people. This is a way that they eradicate the household. So what had initially happened was, when the camps were going full throttle, they initially locked up most of the men. Then you had all the women and children left at homes. Then you had 1.1 million Chinese spies, Chinese officials, were forced to live with these women. And they were essentially spied. How do they live? What language do they speak at home? Do they pray? Do they read Quran? Then we had a lot of rapes. Right? And this is what initially had happened. Now, the most recently, especially for the last year or so, now they are publicly asking for their hand in marriage. And if you reject this, you too will go into a concentration camp, or the rest of your family will, especially their elders. These women are being given as ghanima, as bounties, for the hardworking Chinese officials that have done a very good job at locking up the Uyghurs. So we're at this stage, and now they, on Chinese state-run media, they publicly now advertise, we need Uyghur women. I've seen some of the quote-unquote, say, halal dating apps, for example. And you know how you guys advertise, you know, Muslim men, if you want to marry Muslim women, it's the same sort of thing, but the Chinese government are actually, they've got a dating agency running, you know, state-run dating agency, if you like to speak, yeah.
But how can they get away? How can they do this? I mean, so how do they, if they're in a marriage, How are they forcing these women to do this? I mean, and getting away with it?
Well, no one's doing anything about it. One, you have to. If you don't, you end up in prison. Even, for example, I've spoken to former concentration camp detainees who were in the camps. While they were in the camps, they didn't memorize one of the, for example, if you're in a madrasa, okay, and you read one of the ayat incorrectly, you know, your teacher will go, stop, read that again, maybe properly. So the same sort of thing happened to one of these women, that they wouldn't recite one of the propaganda lines properly to her, the official, and she got beaten. And automatically she said, Allah, you know, she could beat Allah. Ah, you still have something in you. So she was sent to another level of education to even get that ounce of Allah out of her. So you not bowing down to any of these requests, because they come very nicely, but it's actually a command. So they ask you very nice, if you do not accept this, then you are taken away. You disappear.
So let's go step by step. You made a video bringing some of these things to light, and you talked about, I mean, it's just hard to imagine or believe. I mean, because we're given certain freedoms to practice this beautiful way of life, Islam, submission to the Creator, not the creation, you know, which teaches us to be upright and honest, moral human beings, worshiping the one and only Creator of the heavens and the earth. And now all of the tenets of it, I mean, starting off with reading the Quran, you're talking about you can go to jail for that. Saying peace be with you, assalamu alaikum. You can go to jail for this is what you were saying in your video. Is this correct?
Yes.
What are some of the other things, like growing your beard, for instance, wearing hijab, trying to go to Hajj, speaking the language that the Quran was revealed in Arabic, and you went down a whole list of different things. It's just hard to imagine. How is this? I mean, really, really happening.
It really is happening, unfortunately. And even the people who have, you know, very little contact still with their loved ones, they can't even write. For example, we just had Eid. They weren't even able to say Eid Mubarak. So any sort of religious, inkling is oppressed. For example, there was a video released on Douyin. Now, Douyin is the Chinese version of TikTok. And you had a man talking to the rain. He said, you know, oh, rain, take us away. Oh, rain, let the earth shake. Oh, rain, you know, there's nothing to fight for anymore. Why don't you just get rid of this? But we understand the subliminal message there was he was reaching out to Allah. So instead of using the word Allah, he used, oh, rain, oh, rain, oh, rain. So like, as you mentioned, simple terminology like assalamu alaikum. Forget hijab, long clothing. If you are in the summertime, if any woman is wearing long sleeves or a skirt past her knee, a skirt just past her knee, this is illegal. That they're thinking that they are, oh, she actually wants to put hijab and this is the most she can do. So the beard, even the mustache, you know, in the sunnah, we're told to trim the mustache and grow the beard, even because the mustache, the Uyghurs are a Turkic people, and like Turks, culturally they put mustaches. So even nikah, like nikah used to be allowed. You would have like a religious ceremony, and then you would get an official government marriage paper. But a lot of the things that the oppressions or the restrictions that you've just mentioned used to be allowed. So this was coming slowly and slowly and slowly. People used to be allowed to go to Hajj. People used to be. So what would happen is, China would give you 3-4 years of ease and then another 3-4 years of dhulm, of oppression, another 3-4 years. And so to separate the people. But now they're targeting anyone and everyone. So, for example, some people were given permission by the government to go to Hajj. And later on, they were punished for going to Hajj. So they were given permissions to do these things. Even simply going to the United States or to Turkey or to Egypt for education, you get put into a concentration camp. So any form, even the most, you know, owning a sajada, a prayer mat, anything. I mean, I've made the claim that even, to be honest, and I'm sure you agree with me, Israel does not do this to the Palestinians. You know, in Israel, the Palestinians can still fast, can still pray, have hijab, have lihya. They can teach their kids Quran. They can speak Arabic. They can do all these things. And I just like to put it into that context.
So you were saying that women, if they have their dress below the knee, showing modesty, what would happen to them?
They're either humiliated on the street and they have Chinese officials go and cut up their skirts. And you can find these images all over social media. Simply just type it into Google and you'll find them. They're not very difficult to find. Or they are taken away for education. Because Islam is seen as a religion. Islam is seen as a disease. Now, if you are sick, brother, the first thing you do is you go to a doctor. Look, doctor, I'm coughing. There's something wrong with me. The same thing, if there's any sort of religious inkling that they can see in a person, this person needs to be cured. This person needs to have this tumor. And this is out of the leaked documents that were found last year, that they describe Islam as a tumor, as a disease that needs to be removed. And these are the words of Chinese officials themselves.
The reports that we're getting that all this is happening, you know, forcing people to drink alcohol, eat pork, to dress immodestly, pretty much eradication of a systematic attempt to eradicate the religion of the creator, Islam. Where are we getting these reports? Are these firsthand reports coming from people? You're obviously somebody who's creating awareness of this. Where are we getting most of this information from?
From social media images. So people on the ground, they've taken pictures from bus stops, from government buildings. And if you've seen my video, I put those up. And these are plastered all over the walls of East Turkestan in the public arena. Number two, I've personally spoken to people that were locked up for religious reasons. For example, in 2007, they were locked up simply for running a little school in their home of four or five people teaching the people Quran. But nowadays, as I mentioned, you're simply Uyghur. It doesn't matter how religious you are anymore. And so we have had journalists interview people in East Turkestan covering their faces, and they themselves told us of this as well. And from Chinese leaked documents as well. The leaked documents that came out, if you simply type in Chinese leaked documents, a lot of this oppression of the banning of the Islamic restrictions, you can see as well.
We saw some of these videos, journalists from here going over there and exposing these camps. We've also seen lines of Muslims in pretty much covered up in mass. Black hoods, what was it, and being marched somewhere in these camps. So those have been exposed. But why isn't, we don't see much of this being broadcasted over mainstream media. I mean, it seems like the world is asleep to this.
One, it's the access. I mean, many of us, we do have access to Myanmar, to Syria, to Yemen. And you can get into these places, to Palestine. You can get there. There are media teams on the ground. But with China, they don't let anybody in. Journalists are not allowed in. And even if journalists go, let's just say, brother, you wanted to go. Every time a journalist goes and tries to make a documentary, tries to interview the people, they ended up being followed by 10, 15, 20 police officers. So the whole documentary ends up changing into how they were followed throughout the whole time. If China has nothing to hide, why not let people in? I mean, the UN, Western countries have requested China to let them in, to go there and to talk to the people, okay? But they don't allow this. So even just from that, Uyghurs are technically Chinese citizens, and they used to get Chinese passports and leave to and fro to countries as they pleased. No Uyghurs have passports now.
They've taken their passports?
They've taken their passports away. So why aren't Uyghurs allowed to leave? Why can't people go in and talk to the people? So that in itself, if China, you know what? If we were to say, all right, China, don't believe me.
Let's not believe the US. The US is making up all these lies because it's in the US's self-interest to lie about China. Well, why don't they let people in? But when they do let people in, it's not like they don't let people in at all. When they do, they are on stage tours. They are shown the best parts. So they take them to these schools and they call them re-education or vocational schools, and that they are re-educating the youth because the Uyghurs are not intelligent. Well, let's look at some of the people that have gone missing and that are in these camps. You have doctors, you have professors, you've got deans of universities, you've got footballers, you've got millionaires, you've got people that used to work for the Chinese Communist Party regime for 30 years on the verge of retirement, and some that have already retired. These people, the Uyghurs, don't need education. Some of these people had two or three homes. You know, these are rich people. They were sending their kids to the United States, to Turkey, to Europe to study. This is not about educating the people at all. They know the Chinese language.
What are some of the other Muslim majority countries? Do they know about this, obviously? And what are they doing to try to stop this eradication of Islam and oppression, modern day inquisition of the Muslim there?
So since about 2012, 2013, China has, you know, come across to the Middle East and made, you know, multi-billion dollar deals with Saudi Arabia, with the Gulf countries, with Turkey. And they've essentially, Pakistan, they've essentially become China's client states, and they don't utter a word. We would get a few statements of condemnation from here and there, from Turkey, for example, but from the more stronger Muslim majority countries, we don't hear any words of support. And instead, we get those Muslim majority countries, even the leader of Palestine, Mahmoud Abbas, supporting China. And you can see this in the video. And you know what? China actually supports the Palestinians against Israel. So it's the Chinese are very foxy, or very they play this dirty game where they'll rub shoulders with the leaders of Muslims, but in their own borders, they are oppressing them like nothing else on earth.
What about the United Nations? What are they doing about this? They're supposed to be people who are establishing some sort of peace and fighting for justice and against oppression. I mean, they obviously know what's going on. What are they doing?
The UN itself has is a client entity of China now. I mean, perfect example. Look at the World Health Organization. How they've come up to China and rubbed shoulders with them. The World Health Organization is a part of the UN. The UN has played no role they've requested to go in, but they haven't forced anything. And essentially, China is running the show in the UN. And we've seen this not just with the Uyghurs, but with regards to many other issues, whether it be the environment and other economically as well.
So pretty much all these organizations are pretty much compromised. There's big, great conflicts of interest, and they're not actually doing what they were organized and made to do, it seems like.
Exactly. Well, why was the UN set up in the first place? So that another Holocaust does not happen. And we are seeing another Holocaust in the making. The only difference between the first Holocaust and this one is that we don't see people being put into gas chambers and exterminated on a whole. We see something more. Because at least if the Uyghurs were dying, this would be better. They would be put out of their misery. But they are being tortured in these camps. They are being fed 400-500 calorie diets. Their blood is being taken, and our women are being sterilized, and they are being injected with all sorts of God knows what. You had a reporter not so long ago by the name of CJ Werleman, and he has reported on halal organ harvesting. Halal organ harvesting is when they take the organs of the Uyghur Muslims and they are sold to the highest bidders in the Middle East. So it would be better, it would be khair, it would be a rahmah if they just killed us. But this CCP machine is more sophisticated than the Nazis, because they found a way to profit from the Uyghurs, whether it be their organs, whether it be now they're being put through forced slave labor, where they are, where Uyghurs are forced to make our Nike shoes, to make our Adidas bags, to make our Samsung fridges. A report by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute said that 83 global brands were directly or indirectly involved in slave labor.
So this is like you said, a modern day Holocaust Inquisition, and it's just very sad and tragic to see that people are asleep. The world is asleep. I mean, if you just look at all the women, I mean, if we see what's happening to our sisters out there who are being raped and being forced, you know, people, there's no such thing as forced marriage. You cannot force a woman against her will to marry someone in Islam, and people usually attack. Where are the people now to stand up for these women's rights, for the human rights organizations? Are there any on the ground? Are there any who are making noise, who are out there when something happens out in the world? They say, pray for such and such, pray for such. But I mean, is there a mass movement to create awareness and to get the word out of what's happening, of this Inquisition, modern day Holocaust that's happening to these innocent human beings? Whose lives are being affected, men, women, and children in China. China is trying to eradicate Islam out there.
Yeah, as I mentioned, there is no one on the ground. You know how you can donate to Syria or donate to Palestine, and the money will go to the people on the ground? This doesn't happen there. There are no human rights organizations on the ground. Everyone is on the outside, whether it be in Europe or in the United States. And I work with these organizations, like the Uyghur Human Rights Project, like the World Uyghur Congress, the World American Association. There are a campaign for Uyghurs. There are many out there doing their best to advocate. My organization, the Uyghur Revival Association. So we advocate, but there's only so much advocacy that you can do. We really want some sort of, you know, Western military intervention. I mean, it's been done before, you know, we have to really do it again.
Is there any collaboration in this, for instance, with, because you said also Christians, to what extent? Obviously, I think there's more Muslims, but there's also a smaller, big community of Christians that are also being oppressed. So would this be a good joint effort from Christians and Muslims to come together, to try to work together to eradicate this modern day Holocaust Inquisition that's happening in China, by China?
Yeah, so in China, I'm sure the Christian population is much larger than the Uyghur population. But they're from the Chinese population. The Uyghurs are predominantly 99.99% Muslim. And there have been various articles written where, you know, certain Christian leaders are put into prison, but the Christians are not rounded up like the Muslims and being put into concentration camps. So on the outside, we do work with different groups. We do collaborate on certain issues, but the collaboration isn't as strong as we'd like. But a lot of the Jewish community are standing up for the Uyghurs because they realize, hey, that happened to our people 75 years ago. This is a repeating of history. We just need anyone and everyone, regardless of whether you believe in any superpower or not, to save human beings, because that's what the Uyghurs are at the end of the day. It's a human effort. And I've seen that no matter what political aisle you're from and what religion you're from, the Uyghur plight has really united the left and the right. And we saw that with the Uyghur Human Rights Bill that was passed around a month ago, where it was a unanimous unanimous vote within the White House, where the left and right came together and all of them supported, except for one senator, passing the Uyghur Human Rights Bill. And that has played a big role. They've sanctioned certain Chinese officials. They put economic sanctions on China. But whether or not China will secede to that, we'll see, because they've gone ahead and, you know, sanctioned a lot of your politicians like Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Chris Smith, and the likes.
So what do you advise people to do? What can people do to make a change, a difference? What can people who are watching, it saddens their heart, it breaks their heart, but they're like, what can I do to help?
Well, number one, make dua, obviously. Reach out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, make your dua. Number two, social media, talk about it, tweet about it, share about it. If you're a university student and you're going to write a paper, you know, if you're studying politics, write about China. Talk to your professors. Organize rallies within universities. See if your university is linked to any sort of Chinese tech firm, because a lot of the technology that are used to catch the Uyghurs, whether it be the AI technology, the cameras, the certain Chinese apps, see if your university, if they are tied, talk to your university about boycotting, start boycotting these apps, start petitions, get creative with it. You can do so much. You know, team up, find out where your nearest Uyghur organization is, see what they're up to, donate a dollar, boycott Chinese goods. You know, because most likely, if you see a made in China, especially a cotton shirt, 80% of the cotton coming out of China is from East Turkestan. So most likely, if you're wearing a made in China shirt, your shirt came from there, most likely from slave labor. A lot of things you can do.
What about the, just a couple more questions. What about the Chinese people themselves? I know that Bosnia, they have an open visa policy where they don't need a visa to come in. And you see a lot of Chinese people coming, tourists taking pictures. And I've tried to talk to some. Many don't speak English. To those that do, many are scared to talk. But the few that I've spoken to, they talk about that this is just propaganda, that it's not happening. So what's the situation with the actual Chinese people? Are there some who are also, because when the good human beings see injustice, they should stand up and speak about it. So what's with the average Chinese people, and what could they do, and are they speaking up? Or are they also manipulated by their mainstream media?
One, they're manipulated by their mainstream media. And number two, they can't speak out. I mean, they can't even speak out against their own government for what's been happening with the virus, let alone human rights issues. I mean, did you see those doctors disappear? Did you see those doctors being killed? Did you see those citizen journalists on the ground when the CCP virus, when the coronavirus first came about, and how they just disappeared? And they were talking about a health issue, let alone human rights. So the Chinese themselves are oppressed, not as oppressed as the Uyghurs, but they themselves have been oppressed for many years by the Chinese. And they know what's up. They know what's up, but they cannot speak themselves. And many do buy into the Chinese propaganda. And so we don't expect Chinese people within China to speak out against this, because this would be, it's impossible because of the media blackout. For example, if let's just say we were in China and we're sitting together having a cup of tea, we literally would not know if there was a protest a block away. And there are protests all the time happening in China against the Chinese regime, but you simply don't hear about it. People are locked away, executed, and this doesn't just happen to the Uyghurs, it happens to the Chinese as well.
I don't see anything in the future. As far as when you go against God, the Creator Almighty, you pretty much, they're waging a war against the Creator of the heavens and the earth. So inshallah, the help will come. I really want to thank you for creating awareness. We're trying to do our small part, but hopefully China will take heed and change their ways, because they've actually declared war on the Creator of the heavens and the earth. And we know what happens when you do that. It's only a matter of time.
Exactly, Baba.
Yeah. Any closing comments or anything else? How could people get a hold of you if they want to contact you? And
yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter @Arsalan, ArsLan underscore Hidayat, HIDAYAT. I'm the general secretary of the Uyghur Revival Association. We have our Facebook page, Talk East Turkestan. We're the most popular Facebook page highlighting the Uyghur issue in the English language. Follow us there. And just share our things. If you can donate a dollar, and have the conversation. If you don't have
If you don't have exposure on social media, have this conversation with mom and dad. Have it with your friends. You know, talk about it in your community, town hall meetings. All of this matters. Do your bit.
And for us, I mean, really take heed and just appreciate and be grateful for the blessings. You know, it just astonishes me when many of us, you know, we're ungrateful for, and we take Islam for granted. But when you hear of these things, you know, where they're really literally trying to eradicate this deen, Islam, China trying to eradicate it. Now reading Quran, the things that people we stay away from, they can't even open up the Mus'haf, right? But we have it every day. We're not opening it up. Praying, making sajda. You go to jail for making sajda and praying, right? Hijab, you try to wear it. They're forcing you to wear mini skirts. Drinking alcohol, they're forcing you to do it. And you got so many other examples there. It's just crazy. We need to appreciate the blessings that we have and really implement our deen so that our du'as can more likely be accepted and we can really be grateful for all the blessings that God Almighty, the Creator Allah, has given us. And this is a great reminder for that and just continue to make du'a for all those who are suffering all over the world, especially here.
Yeah. And my advice to brother, you said it perfectly. Just because all of these things are happening, all those restrictions, no one should think for a second that the iman has left the heart. I'm sure people are worshipping in their heart, even though they cannot worship physically. No regime can, you know, get rid of Islam just like this, because Allah promises that this will go on until the day of judgment. And so you will be judged accordingly.
It reminds me, we've seen in the past, I mean, history just repeating itself. They tried to eradicate God out of the systems, out of the institutions. These comments happened in Bosnia and this in the Balkans. But what happened at the end? It's been eradicated. It's gone. And the belief was still, like you said, in the hearts of the people. And that reigned supreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much for being with us. May God Almighty, the Creator Allah, reward you for all your work and helping to create awareness for these suffering, tortured, oppressed people, the Muslims in this part of the world. Thank you, brother.
May Allah reward you as well, and make the deen show, you know, inshallah, your ticket to Jannah, because I've Ameen. Been following you for so long, and you do such great work.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ameen. Thank you, my brother. Jazakallah khair. Thank you so much. And if you like this episode of the Deen Show, like this video, share this video far and wide, and support us on our Patreon page so we can continue this work. Thank you for tuning in. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.